Welcome to the J.P. Shadrick Podcast. I'm J.P. Shadrick, and today is Wednesday, December 28th. And here's a look around the Jacksonville Jaguars organization. Hope everybody had a Merry Christmas. Well, the Jaguars did after the win over the Tennessee Titans on Christmas Eve. We'll have a long conversation with Jaguars wide receivers coach Jerry Sullivan coming up. And we'll dig into a football coaching career that started in 1971 at Kansas State. And wait until you hear one of his first player projects with the Wildcats that year. Pretty amazing stuff coming up. The Jags are starting work for the season finale this Sunday, a New Year's Day meeting with the Indianapolis Colts at Lucas Oil Stadium in downtown Indianapolis. Also, congrats to Jalen Ramsey. He was named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week after the effort against the Titans. A pick six with four passes defensed. Back-to-back great games for the rookie corner, who's in the hunt for Defensive Rookie of the Year honors in the NFL. Joey Bosa, the pass rusher for the San Diego Chargers, is in the mix as well. We'll see what the AP comes up with in the voting. One more game to see if Ramsey can stuff the ballot box late. Our guest today on the J.P. Shadrick Podcast is Jaguars wide receivers coach Jerry Sullivan. Coach, it's good to see you, man. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
It's week 17. It has been a long, hard season, 3-12 record for this Jaguars team, but it's almost over. It has been a long, tough stretch for this group, and it's just been so close to being the other way around and being very positive around here, so close away. It's got to be a little frustrating, right?
Well, you know, I go back to the game, first game of the year against Green Bay. You know, we were all excited about it, and, you know, our guys played their butts off, and we didn't come away with that one. And I don't know what long-term ramifications it had, but, you know, it didn't help us. And we seem like I'm speaking offensively now, mm-hmm. that we rhythmically speaking, we just struggled to do things that a year ago came relatively easy for us.
Well, you didn't struggle last week in the game against Tennessee. That looked pretty sharp, the sharpest this team has looked all year long.
No question. I'm, again, speaking of the offense. Yeah. You know, but as a team, defense has played well, and you can see the improvement. And for us, it was kind of a landmark game in terms of, you know, how we played, how we performed this year. And it was great to see different people step up.
Allen Robinson was one of those guys, the biggest day in his season so far. And I know he's been struggling through a lot, different coverages and trying to get open and some drops here and there. But he finally put a game together. They moved him around a little bit, too, it sounds like.
Yes, we did. But we've moved him around throughout the year, really. And maybe not as obvious, but we've moved him around. And, you know, I told him you know, as he was going in the off season, and, you know, he was very celebrated and made the Pro Bowl. I told him in OTAs, I said, you know, this league is about taking guys out of what they do well. And I said, you have to understand that, and it'll be a lot harder next year. And it was, to some, you know, it was harder. I think he's learned a lot of life lessons in terms of, you know, be glad for what you did last year, but know that this year it has no – if you're a 300 hitter last year and you bat 220 this year, all that anybody remembers that you batted 220. So it's, you know, like I said, it's been disappointing for him. It's been disappointing for Allen Hurns. It's been disappointing for Rashad Green. Marquise has made some giant steps. He's been healthy. He's got great explosiveness, and he's his game, if he in his mind, in the mental part of it, is if that game would just slow down a little bit more for him, he's a real lethal weapon. And he's a tough kid and a very coachable kid, and it's been very rewarding to see his acceleration and climb up the ladder.
That's been really one of the great stories of the season, is the Marquise Lee project and sticking with him even through the injuries, the soft tissue stuff the last couple of years. Mentally, it was an issue for him to fight through that the last couple of years, but it seems like it's paid off here in 2016.
Well, like I said, he's a tough kid now. He's not a soft, you know, a lot of times receivers are viewed as, you know, not as tough as a lot
of... A diva, right?
Yeah, yes, and he's a tough, hard-nosed kid, and you know, he'll run up in there and he'll block and he'll do the things you got to do to be a good player. And so he, it was, like I said, it's nice to see him play without injury. And obviously he's, people know who he is now.
Jerry Sullivan is with us, Jaguars wide receivers coach. Let's go back in your history a little bit, Jerry.
It's a long time.
Okay, let's go back to 1971. That was your first coaching job, is that right?
Yeah, I was a graduate assistant at Kansas State University for Vince Gibson, who's Vince passed away a few years ago. But I was the offensive coach for the freshman team. That was when they had freshman football and freshmen weren't eligible to play. And I coached. Had a wonderful experience then. We had a guy who we brought in as a freshman who was a defensive back. And we had a quarterback that was highly recruited. And the quarterback who was highly recruited hurt his shoulder. So I took the defensive back and converted him to a quarterback.
Okay.
And he's in, I think he's in the New England Hall of Fame. His name is Steve Grogan.
Okay, yes.
And I coached Steve Grogan, really worked with him a lot on throwing the football. I was coaching quarterbacks at the time. And Steve was one of those guys. I always tell the story. We were out in spring practice the next spring, and Steve threw a pass, and the receiver dropped it, and it deflected off his hands, and the defensive back intercepted it. And as the defensive back was running down the sideline, Steve hit him and broke a couple ribs on him.
Couldn't get the DB out of him, right?
Well, I'm just saying he's a tough guy. He wore a neck collar in the NFL, probably the only quarterback that ever wore one. And back in – those were the days back at Kansas State, yeah.
That's pretty funny. Wow. Yeah,
way back when.
Way back when. Your first gig in the NFL was 1992 with San Diego?
Correct. I worked for Bobby Ross for 9 years. I worked with Bobby, 5 in San Diego. We had some really good years there. We went to the Super Bowl there in the 94 season. And then I went to Detroit with Bobby in 97. And so was there for 4 years. And we were right on the edge of being real good, and we never could quite get it going, you know, to where we were. Got in the playoffs a couple times.
Yeah, some good teams, yeah.
Yeah, had the pleasure of coach, you know, helping Barry Sanders. The 97 year we went there, he rushed for 2,000 some yards, and had a great relationship with him as a personal as well as a player, and had unbelievable respect for that guy, the humbleness and the just the kind of person he is. So it was a real thrill to be around him.
Your chance to call plays came in 2003 with the Arizona Cardinals, right? Mm-hmm. Offensive coordinator, or was it as a title? How did that work out?
Well, for me, my years with Bobby, I had a large part to say in what we did passing the football.
Got it.
And, you know, all the way from 94 all the way till I stopped coaching for him, and probably would have coached for him forever. Bobby had to give it up for health reasons. But and then when I went to the Cardinals, I was involved in it, and then became the coordinator. And we had I had a fun year. Anquan Boldin was a rookie of the year that year, and I got to coach him and call the plays and all that stuff. And then we didn't win enough games, and I left, or as they say in the business, I got fired, and which happens. And but it was a great experience, and I went to Miami from there. And Dave Wannstedt was in coming off a 10-6 season. We started off 1-7. He got fired, and then Coach Saban came in there, and I wound up going to San Francisco with Mike Nolan, who is a really good friend of mine. And Mike did a fabulous job at San Francisco that nobody will ever know about. That team that they wound up going to the Super Bowl with and all that, mm-hmm. Mike had a huge part of that in terms of he hired Scott McLuhan, who drafted a lot of those guys. And when we went there in 2005, that place was not a destination point at all. It's kind of run down and ugly, and Mike did a great job. He got fired a couple years later. And then Mike Singletary took over. And then I left and retired.
Yeah, you were out for a year or so, right? A little over a year.
No, just a year.
Okay.
As my wife said, you were out for 3 months.
And that's how that works.
Yeah, and then that was the year of the lockout. And I was sitting at home one day, and we were living in Austin, Texas. We had built a house there. And I got a phone call about noon, and it was Larry Fitzgerald. And Larry said, "Coach, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm not doing anything right now." He said, "I want you to come out here and train me during the lockout." So I said, "Well, you know, when do you want me to come?" He said, "Tonight." And my wife wasn't home, so I called her on the phone, told her I was going to Phoenix. And got on the plane and went out there and worked with Larry. And really for – there were some other guys that came through there, a lot of guys really. But I spent a lot of time with Larry, and I lived at his house. And for really pretty much April, May – mid-June, I went back to I would basically stay there Monday through Friday, and then I'd go home for the weekend. You could get a direct from Austin to Phoenix. So I worked with Larry, and it was great. And then I went back to Phoenix back to Austin for a couple of weeks. And Larry goes to Minnesota in the summer. That's where he grew up, and he has a house there. And I went up there. He wanted me to come up. I went up there and spent about a month and a half. And then the lockout ended, and all the guys took off. And Kyle Rudolph was with us that year, and there was a lot of guys coming through.
Yeah.
And then so after that, I kind of bumped around that fall. I'd coached at LSU for a long time, and they had a couple reunions in Baton Rouge, you know, where – the 86 team, we won the SEC and had a lot. We had, I think, on that team, we might have had 7 guys drafted in round 3 or higher off that defense.
Wow.
And so I went to a couple of LSU games. I went over to North Carolina State to see Mike Archer, who was a friend of mine. Just kind of was a lot of I went up to spend a week with Bobby Ross and went to Kentucky to see Coach Arnsberger. And just kind of bumped around. And I was in Atlanta training Brian Quick at CES. And I was in a Firehouse sub on a Sunday. And Mike Mularkey called me and asked me if I would come. He was getting a head job here, and if I would come here. And I said, I'd be glad. I'd like to come over and take a look at it. Ironically, 15 minutes later, Ken Wisenhunt was the head coach at the Cardinals, called me and asked me if I would come to Phoenix. So I knew my relationship with Larry was going to, you know, have a big part of it. But ironically, I came here and I talked to Mike, and then I talked to Shad, and was very impressed with the thought that was into the, you know, what was going to take place here. I went to Phoenix, and I knew the Bidwells, but it was a whole different venue there. They had, you know, basically that program was on the rise in terms of, you know, when I was there, we played in Sun Devil Stadium, and you know, in front of a throng of 25 or 30,000, and you know, so that had changed, and you know, the culture changed, and they had the new stadium, and you know, things were up for them. But anyway, I wound up coming back and working here, and that was the year I had Cecil, and he had a really good year. And so then Gus came in, and Bruce Arians had taken over at the same time, and Bruce asked me if I would come there. I didn't know Gus at all, and I just basically about the second day Gus was here, I went into his office, and I said, "Coach, you know, I know you don't know me, and – I understand that, and I know this is a league of leverage, so I don't have really any leverage to kind of go by." I said, "But I need to know something, because I have an opportunity, and I'm going to take it if you choose to go in another direction, and which is the common, that's a nice way of people telling you that they're rejecting you, but they're saying it in a nice way. I'm going in another direction. So, basically, I came in the next day, and Gus said, I talked to somebody, and they told me I would be remiss if I didn't keep you. And I said, just out of curiosity. He said, I talked to Pete Carroll, and Pete and I knew each other. He tried to hire me a time or two along the way. And so that was how I kind of basically wound up here. So that kind of gives you a brief surmise of my travels in the NFL.
It's funny, though, because that whole path to get where you are now, well, there's change at every place. Yeah. I mean, like you said, people get fired, things happen, and somebody leaves, and there's always change in the air, especially in the National Football League.
Yep, and it's always a very public thing. I was saying when we were in Detroit, my wife was taught elementary school, and she had first and second graders, and they're always very honest, and Bobby Ross had resigned with about four games to go, and we were sitting right on the brink. We were 9-6, and we're playing the Bears in the last game of the season. They're 3-12. And they kick a 57-yard field goal with about 2 seconds to go in the game and beat us, knocks us out of the playoffs. Bam, that's the end of that deal in Detroit. And so my wife goes back to school after the first year, and I hadn't attached to anybody yet. And my wife's first day of school, she's asking the kids, well, how was your Christmas? And what did you get and all that? And one little kid said, I know what you did for Christmas. And my wife said, what was that? And she said, your husband got fired. And so, and I said, I laughed because, in most places in society, when somebody gets fired, it's usually a pretty private thing. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yeah.
But in the NFL, all you have to do is turn on the TV and you can see your name come across the bottom in the graphic, as – however they say it, dismissed, going in another direction, all the things that are, basically we're rejecting you, we're going somewhere else to get another. So, we all have go through that in this business, and in that light, it's not a very pleasant thing for kids of coaches and families that have to pick up and move, and some guys had too many beers in the row five, and he's screaming, a bunch of obscenities at you as a coach, and then he goes home and plops in his bed, and he doesn't realize that when you get fired, it's an entertainment business, and you got to win, and that's what it is, and people are very emotional about their football, especially in the South, and everywhere. I mean, Mike McCarthy and I are great friends. We worked together at San Francisco, and they had a four-game losing streak, and you started seeing things out there like, Mike McCarthy would get fired. And,
right.
I mean, if they would do that, that's insane. I mean, the guy's been seven straight playoffs. But that's the social media has made it a whole different deal, in terms of how they people go online, and I'll look at some Twitter sometime, and they're hiding under their desk. The guys that are writing the ugly stuff about, I mean, they say things. Some people out there say things that you wouldn't say to the worst person you've ever known. But they don't have to show up for that stuff.
That's right.
You can be a coward and be proud of it. You know what I'm saying? So, anyhow, regardless of that, it just is a very it's tough on coaches' kids, and grown-ups, they can transition a little better, but coaches' kids, it's a harder deal.
What's your Twitter handle? Do you have a
I'm a Neanderthal man when it comes to technology.
I thought the guys in the locker room would help you out with that.
No, I tell you what, I like the phone. I think it's a I like all that. I think it's a blessing and a curse. I think the blessing of it is the convenience of it, that you know, for carrying it around. I think the curse of it is people are addicted to the thing, and it's like it controls their life. It's, you know, I go to Starbucks and I see these little girls get out of the car and they carry their phone in like they have the code to the nuclear bomb, and somebody may call them and they may have to flip the switch. I'm just fascinated by all the, you know, so I use it for the, it's like my wife said to me about the car. She said, well, what about all the thing? I said, hey, I just set the channels for the radio that I want to listen to. I know how to get it and drive in reverse. I said, and the guy down at the place where we go, he knows how to fix it, and that's what he's supposed to do. So
that's pretty easy then.
That's right. That's what I want to do, the easy thing.
Let's finish with this big picture now. From starting and coaching in the early 70s in the NFL, in the early 90s, it's 2016, at least for a couple more days. what's the biggest change in the game that you've seen? Good, bad? Is it still the same game you were playing 30, 35 years ago? And is it better? Is it worse?
Well,
it's a broad question, I know.
Yeah, it's hard. If you go back in time, people say, you know, well, he's an old timer and all that stuff. But in my mind's eye, the speed of the game is more than people, you know, when you're sitting in your seat and you're slugging down a hot dog and a beer and you're sitting up there, you don't realize the velocity of people hitting and all that. Now, I think the concussion protocol is a good thing. I didn't grow up playing football like that. When I grew up, they said, stick your face in there, bud, and hit them. And if you didn't stick your face in there, you were
You were soft.
You were soft. But, you know, that's then and this is now. I think the biggest things I've seen, this is just me, okay?
Yeah.
And I have to be careful how I phrase this or they'll come down and find me here. But I think the amount of in the passing game, the amount of lack or their lack of what they say the rules are in terms of, if you read the rule book, it's a 5 yard, and after 5 yards, there's no more contact. That has become obsolete, and there's a lot of that. There's a lot that goes on in the secondary that's, you know, seen and not. You know, I know there's a lot. That's where I've seen the biggest changes. I mean, the running game is the running game. You know, now a lot of people are in the spread. I came along when I was first started playing ball, and we threw the ball when I was at Florida State. When we threw the ball, you know, we were throwing it because we weren't as good as everybody else, and we couldn't get the I formation and run it down your throat like Michigan and Ohio State and all of them. Then you saw the wishbone evolve, and then and I remember this from a long time ago. The first time I remember the spread formation, there was a guy when I was a kid growing up. This is if you go back and Google this guy's name, his name was Red Hickey.
Okay.
Red Hickey was the coach of the San Francisco 49ers, and they ran the shotgun, which at that time in the NFL was like now if you ran the wing tee. I mean, that's how different. I mean, he was like, what is this guy doing? And he had a bunch of quarterbacks. As a matter of fact, he had Billy Kilmer. He had a guy named Bob Waters, who became a coach. And I remember, and he had some early success with it, and then eventually caught up with him, and it didn't work. But if you go back I think maybe even John Brody might have been in that. But if you go back and Google that guy up, it would say Red Hickey would tell you about the spread. He was a kind of inventor of the spread. But, you know, it's the game's fast. People are bigger, stronger. They run better. I think when the collective bargaining agreement came about and the players got less time, I think that's hurt the game in terms of some of the technical stuff that you were able to teach.
Absolutely, yeah, especially like offensive line and right. All that kind of stuff.
Tackling. Your time frame is much more condensed now than it was then. Now, there were some people back then that, you know, that were buttheads, and they made people make the rules, but
maybe by going too far with it.
Yeah. You know, like if you don't come to, if you're not here by March 15th and you're a free agent guy, then you might not make the team. You know, that kind of stuff, like that stupid stuff like that. But but for the most part, like I said, it's a great game. Dan Henning told me this one time, and he's a really good coached me up a little bit, and he said, it's a great game and a really hard – he didn't say it quite like that, but he said it's a really hard business. And it is a great game. And it's no – you look around and you see the attendance and people – the interest in this game is huge. And I'm very thankful for the people that helped me to be better at what I did. The older coaches like Bill Arnsberger, who is a defensive genius, those guys that kind of made the game what it is today, that are often forgotten, you know, the older guys. And I remember when I was a young coach, I used to like to listen to them talk about, you know, because then training camp was 2.5 months. Guys had jobs in the off season. I remember Jim Taylor, who was a Green Bay Packer legend and a Hall of Fame guy. Jim lived in Baton Rouge and lives in Baton Rouge. And when I was coaching LSU, I got to talk to him one time, and I said, he told me when he, I think he might have led the league in rushing that year, maybe like 1,500 yards. And he went in for a pay raise, and I think he asked for like $1,000, and they told him they'd give him $500. And people don't know how different it was back then. You know, there was no off-season program. You know, guys left after and they came back for training camp, and that's how they got in shape. So, you know, I have great feelings for the generation that made the game as it is. The technological age has come along, and there's so many great things, that the convenience to watch so many games on TV and, you know, be right there, you know. And I think there's too many talk shows on. Too many guys on TV got too much free time. They make their money by critiquing everybody. And, you know, it's easy to sit in the booth and, you know, have all the answers. But it's a great game. I'm thankful for what I was able to learn from it, to be able to have a career like I've had. And I appreciate guys like yourself who make it better.
Talking about you making it better, Jerry. It's awesome to have you, man.
Well,
this
I appreciate
is fantastic.
It.
And it sounds like you're not going to be in the TV booth whenever you decide to hang it up.
Well, you know what? I like talking about the history of the game, and I like talking about, you know, when people ask me about a player, I like to talk about, you know, players and, you know, what I think that they – what skill level they have and that kind of stuff. That's I do – sometimes, like Black Monday comes next week,
yes,
and I think I get a little bit irritated with the frenzy that evolves around people losing their jobs. You know what I'm saying? If I went to IBM and some guy lost his job and I stood out the door with a TV camera and said, okay, how do you feel? Well, you know how you feel.
Yeah,
you know, how do your kids feel? Well, your kids are in school and they're talking about your dad just lost his job. You know, I'm just saying those are things that in the business, but hey, we're in that business. You know, it's like kind of like the entertainment. If you go to a movie and it's a bad movie, you say, man, that movie stinks. But you don't go on TV and talk about it.
Right.
You know, so let somebody. But anyhow, I'm very grateful. I don't mean to go on and on. But like I said, it's been I've had a great run. And I've coached in this league for 25 years and I've always had a job. And I'm thankful for that. And I've met a lot of great people. I've been fortunate that I've been able to coach a lot of good guys and been able to see them. Like we went to Detroit this year, and I wrapped my arms around Anquan Boldin and, you know, what he is. I think last night he moved past Reggie Wayne. I think he's like number 8 now. And I had him in the first game of his career. And I tell the story. It was in the Detroit Press last week. They did a big story on him. The first game I ever had him, we were playing the Lions in Detroit. Mariucci was the coach up there, and we went up there, and I had basically the offense had been gutted. Jake Plummer had gone.
Wow.
David Boston gone. Yeah. Frank Sanders was gone. And so we go up there. I got a bunch of young guys, but I had a couple of young kids that were playing outside for me. And so Anquan, we went into the first game of the year, and he was the third wide receiver. Well, at the end of the game, he had, I think he had 10 catches for two, or something like 12 catches for 210 yards, or 217 yards, which is still a rookie record.
Yeah.
And at the end of the season, he had 101 catches for like 1,400 yards, and he was a rookie of the year that year, and the first team Pro Bowl guy. But the thing that's really neat about him is he was such a coachable guy to coach. And then you see him last year, he got the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, which I was so proud of him and happy for him, because that's the kind of guy. And he grew up in a place in Florida that's a really tough place down around Pahokee, Belglade, around the Everglades. Mm-hmm. Those are little migrant towns where people come in the winter and they pick vegetables, and those, it's a tough area to grow up in. And you just, you know, just see what kind of man he is, and you know, that makes your day. You know, I've had guys that should be in the Hall of Fame that are not. He's a guy that I hope gets in it. I was with Isaac Bruce for a couple years, Larry Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. Those are guys that are such a credit to the game, and you know, and to what they do. So,
well, you're a credit to the game too, Jerry. We appreciate your time, man.
Ciao.
Jaguars Thursday Radio is 2 hours again this week. The first hour on the entire radio network, including some time with interim head coach Doug Marrone. The second hour on 1010XL Radio in Jacksonville. Both hours will be available on Jaguars.com and the Jags app. Jaguars Weekend Television is back this week. New Year's Eve at 10:30 on Channel 4 in Jacksonville, and outside of the Jacksonville market, you better check your local listings. The Jags face the Indianapolis Colts New Year's Day at 1 o'clock. Jaguars Radio Network coverage starts at noon with Countdown to Kickoff, but the day starts at 10 o'clock with the Publix Tailgate Show on 1010XL, Jaguars.com, and the Jaguars app. Thanks to Jaguars wide receivers coach Jerry Sullivan for his time this week, and as always, a special thanks to Jaguars manager of radio, Joe Fortunato. Thanks to you for listening to the J.P. Shadrick Podcast.